So, who is excited about the new photos of Pluto and its moon sent back from the New Horizon mission this week? NASA scientists sure are, and so are we. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July 16th. We will talk with a University of Wisconsin-Madison space scientist this hour about what we are learning about Pluto and why it matters. And we will welcome your questions and your views, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And by the way, I did post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page a link from NASA that includes some of the photos and the video of the news conference that lead scientists held yesterday, talking about the discoveries learned from the images that were sent back from the New Horizon mission. Let me welcome our guest. Sanjay Lamahe is a distinguished senior scientist in planetary science at the Space Science and Engineering Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you as excited by these images as the NASA scientists?
Oh, it is absolutely wonderful. I think every time you are exploring something new and seeing whole new worlds for the first time, there's a feeling you just can't describe.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I'm not a scientist, but I'm mildly interested in space and certainly in Pluto for some reason. It holds a special place in a lot of our hearts. This is pretty amazing. Let's talk a little bit about, first, the New Horizon mission and the spacecraft. It's been it's been on its way to Pluto for almost 10 years now.
Almost 10 years, right. It was launched, I believe, in January 2006 on a very big rocket, an Atlas V rocket. And first it flew past Jupiter just about 13 months later, in about March 2007, I think. And then now it's arrived at Pluto. So it's a very fast journey. To give you an idea, Voyager 1 and 2, two spacecraft twins, they were launched in August and September of 1977. And it took more than 2.5 years, about 26 months or 27 months, to get to Jupiter. And New Horizons did that in half that period, 13 months.
it is fast, but still you think 10 years. That means Pluto is a long
way. Far away.
Far, far away. How far away is it?
About 3 billion miles, I think that's the total distance traveled. Now, Pluto's orbit is kind of eccentric. It's elongated. It's not very circular. So the distance to Pluto from the sun does change year by year. But it takes a long time to make one circuit around the planet, and that's one of the challenges, is that we are just arriving. Actually, we are capturing Pluto at its right moment, in the sense that it's approaching the sun, it's getting closer.
Yeah.
And so its atmosphere, which is frozen at times. In fact, it may not have any atmosphere when it's very far, far away from the sun. Now we actually, it evaporates and it develops an atmosphere.
So can you explain what the purpose, the mission of New Horizons was? Was it to go to Pluto?
It was a mission selected to go to Pluto, and not just Pluto, but also to explore one more object beyond Pluto, object belonging to a area of space called the Kuiper Belt. And so in about 4 years from now, in sometime in 2019, it will fly past one more object, which should be similar to Pluto, but we shall see how different it is from Pluto.
Well, we'll have you back then and talk about that.
Certainly.
But so do you think the mission was successful?
Oh, it was absolutely successful. But I think, in this moment of excitement, what is easy to forget is the amount of struggle and political battles it took to launch that mission. I mean, I remember in the 1990s, there was a mission proposed by a Jet Propulsion Laboratory called Pluto Fast Flyby. And these were the days when, well, of course, seems like those days never go away. There's always a budget problem. Either there's always deficit, Congress doesn't want to spend money. Yeah. You talk to people, public, the taxpayers, and they say, of course, explore space. But to actually get funding from NASA, and NASA gets its funding from Congress, so for Congress to allocate enough money to launch space missions is not an easy task, and this mission certainly had many, many years of struggle.
So let's let's talk about why does it matter to see photographs of Pluto?
I think as human beings, we are curious. I think every child begins as a very curious person, and that's how we learn. And you begin by exploring your neighborhood, and in a sense, we are just exploring our larger neighborhood. And you know, it's amazing. I mean, we are living in a wonderful time, that in a time of less than six decades, we have gone from our home planet, Earth, and our immediate neighbor, the Moon, to the furthest outpost in the solar system that we have known for most of the last century. So it's an amazing feat, and I think it happened only because of the efforts of thousands of people. And, of course, it builds upon the work of many people even before that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we did learn. I guess so. We've learned that Pluto is slightly bigger than we thought it was.
It is slightly bigger, and I think why does it matter? I mean, after all, it's only 1,453 miles in diameter, but it turns out that it is about 26 miles larger than the next similar object. That led to some of the debate about what to call these objects that were being discovered. You recall there was a debate about whether Pluto is a planet or not, and we'll go into that later. It doesn't really matter. I think if you look at those images, if you didn't know the size and you put them up next to pictures of Mars, you would say, what an amazing surface. So what kind of geography or geology has it had? It is round. It has five moons, goes around the sun. And so by the classical definition, it's a planet. But many of my colleagues will disagree very violently.
And so you're on the planet side of the debate.
I'm a card-carrying member of the Division for Planetary Sciences, and actually I was the press officer during the period when this debate erupted. And I actually ended up releasing the press release about this issue of whether or not Pluto is a planet. And what had happened was there was a committee of planetary scientists, not astronomers, not astrophysicists, but planetary scientists, people who actually study the planets. And they came up with a slightly more reasonable, workable definition of what is a planet. And that would have raised the number of planets that we, or the number of objects that we call planets, to 12. And Pluto would have been one of those. But there are other asteroids which are not that far away, you know, Ceres, Pallas, Vesta. And two of them would have become planets because they are large enough. Now, why does it matter? And I think you really have to go back to how the name planet came about. I mean, if you look at the calendar, today is Thursday.
Yeah.
And why, ask yourself the simple question, why are there only 7 days in a week? I mean, the sun doesn't care how we define a week. But why seven?
Why seven?
Well, let's start with pick any day you want.
Let's see, Saturday.
Saturday, okay. So Saturday is named after
Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Next comes
Sunday. The sun.
Then comes
Monday, the moon. I didn't yeah. know this.
Then,
okay.
Then Tuesday.
I don't know.
Mars. Mardi.
Okay.
Wednesday, it's after Mercury. Thursday, Thor, Jupiter.
I get
Friday,
it.
Venus.
So we named the days of the week after the planets.
And the amazing thing is that if you, at least in the Indian and the Western astronomy or culture. If you look at the names of the days of the week, that sequence is the same, and they are named after the same objects. So if you pick up the Sanskrit name for the day of the week, it's exactly similar to what is Monday in the Western world.
I get it. Well, we have to take a pause here because sure. We have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about Pluto and what we are learning about the New Horizons mission to Pluto. Have you seen these photographs? Have you heard about some of these discoveries? It has reignited the debate over whether Pluto is a planet or not. We'll talk more about that after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. So guess what we are talking about this hour? We are talking about Pluto. We are taking a look at Pluto's New Horizon mission and what we are learning from the images, the photographs that are being sent back of Pluto and its moons. And we're welcoming your questions. What do you want to know about Pluto? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sanjay Lamaye. He is a distinguished senior scientist in planetary science at the Space Science and Engineering Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And yes, he is a Pluto expert. Jerry on Facebook says, Pluto should be grandfathered into planet status. Tim on Facebook says, this is all really great. Now make Pluto a planet again.
Oh, it's always a planet.
And Gary on Facebook says, although Pluto may be the largest object within its orbit, it still does not have enough mass to have collected all those other objects, so it is not considered a dominant gravitational force there. This criteria of attaining the status of a planet does make some sense, so sadly, Pluto will still remain a dwarf until it stands up and starts kicking some gravitational butt in the neighborhood. So we've reignited the debate on our Facebook page, Professor Lamaye.
Yeah, and I'm glad this last person obviously has read the IU definition, but his interpretation may be somewhat different than I think what was intended. The definition was that it was supposed to have cleared its orbit, not gravitation, because gravitation was initially used to ask whether or not it was mass enough to become round, unlike some of the moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos, for example, which are just rocks, or even Hydra, one of the moons of Pluto. They are not spherical, they're not round, they're just, you know, weird-shaped, elongated objects. So Pluto is round, we saw yesterday. Charon, which was discovered in 1978, I remember the discovery being announced, it's also round. So they certainly have enough gravity. Mm-hmm. Well, if you now want to focus on that the object must have cleared its neighborhood, then we run into a problem, because then Neptune would not be a planet either, because the orbits of Pluto and Neptune cross.
Yeah, I heard one scientist said if you put Earth where Pluto is, it wouldn't be defined a planet either.
Yeah, and so I don't think it's a very accurate definition of what a planet should be. And it really doesn't matter. Pluto doesn't care what we call it. It's round. It goes around the sun. It's got moons. As far as I'm concerned, it's a planet. You want to call it dwarf, go ahead, fine. But it still is a planet to me.
There we go. So have you had debates with Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Well, we have run into each other. I don't know him that well, but yes. I think he was just trying to... he's an astronomer. He's not a planetary scientist. And I think the whole thing started, or rather blew up in his face, when they were redesigning the space gallery at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. And in the gallery, they put all the planets, but they didn't have Pluto. And people children especially, started asking, where's Pluto? Where's Pluto?
Yeah, and I did, by the way, post a photo of Neil deGrasse Tyson along with the Disney character Pluto, and he said friends again or something like that. But in fact, Pluto, the Disney character, was named after Pluto. Oh, yeah. We have kids kids at heart have a special, I guess, place for Pluto.
The amazing thing is that the name Pluto was suggested by an 11-year-old girl.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Virginia Bernie Fair, and she was at the New Horizons launch. I think she became a professor of mathematics or teaching mathematics, I think, at a school. She was invited to the launch. She was not able to make it, but there's an interview posted with her on one of the NASA websites. And she described how she came up with the name. I remember reading it, that she was having breakfast 14th February, I believe, or March 1930, when her grandfather, or father, I don't recall exactly, read out the news that a new planet was discovered, and then he asked, I wonder what it will be called. So she thought a little bit, and she said, Pluto.
Aww.
And she knew about the planets, the names, and certainly the Greek and Roman mythology. And so based on that, she suggested the name Pluto as the god of the underworld. Who has the quality of disappearing for a while, I guess. And so that's what... Now, the fact that the first two letters are also linked or the same as the initials of Percival Lowell, who was, in a sense, responsible for the discovery indirectly. Well, help, but that was just a coincidence.
We are talking about Pluto, and we are talking about what we are learning about Pluto from the NASA New Horizons mission, sending photographs back from this planet. There, I said it instead of dwarf planet. But just to recap, Dr. Lemaye, you're saying you believe it qualifies as a planet, but you say it really doesn't matter. Call it a dwarf planet if you want, but
I mean, you know, I mean, we don't call in your family, if you have step parents, step brothers, step sisters, you don't always say step this, step that.
You say
brother. So what's the big deal? I don't get it.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the discoveries too that we're learning. Let's go to Victor in West Dallas, who has a question. Hi, Victor.
Hi, enjoying your program like ours.
Good morning.
You know, I'm impressed with the technology. The center probe, the size of a piano, 9.5 years, put it in a dormant condition, and then wake it up, where it takes 4.5 hours. To transmit one way.
Yep.
We should pat ourselves on the back as human beings.
And you should be proud of the fact that from the beginning until the end, it's all been NASA, United States of America.
It's just fantastic. The only thing I regret is we couldn't slow it down. Well, we could orbit for a while, take more deep analysis of the planet, and then speed it back up.
that's the stuff of science fiction, Star Trek. The difficulty is that to slow down, you have to carry a lot of fuel with you.
And
if you add all that fuel, then you couldn't get off the Earth.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But there are bigger and bigger rockets being developed. I mean, you know, Atlas V was not the biggest rocket we have built. Saturn V still has that, distinction. Yeah. So if it was launched on a Saturn V, yes, you could have taken some fuel and slowed it down a little bit and maybe gotten there a little bit faster. So it would have. It's not impossible. It's a question of putting enough money into development. And so ultimately, how much are you willing to pay for it?
Yeah, Victor, did you have a question?
Yeah, one more question is, with the vastness of space, and I always get to wonder, would the human race ever be able to conquer space? You saw 3 billion miles, 9.5 years at 40,000 miles roughly per hour. Will we be able to conquer any kind of space in the future?
New Horizons isn't done yet. It's going to continue to another Kuiper Belt object. It'll get there in about 2019.
What is the Kuiper Belt?
The Kuiper Belt is named after Gerard Kuiper, who used to be an astronomer at the University of Chicago. He passed away in 1970s, late 70s, I think. And he, the name Belt is given or named after him because he had talked about some ideas about a reservoir of objects that come close to the sun, like comets. We don't know where the comets come from. So there are basically two volumes of space. One is called the Kuiper Belt and one is the Oort Cloud. The Oort Cloud sends us the long-period comets, and the Kuiper Belt sends us the short-period comets, or so it was thought. But late into the 60s, 70s, we didn't know too much about the deep space because Hubble hadn't been launched yet, and all we knew was based on the ground-based telescopes. And so we didn't really know where the comets came from. And so there were these ideas proposed. And so the name Kuiper Belt objects stuck because you're trying to, you know, the question was, let's get back. How did the solar system form? How did the planets form? I mean, we are all sort of now accept.
Big Bang.
Yeah, well, let's not get into the Big Bang. That's an entirely different topic. But we had the gas and from which the sun formed, like condensation. And then the planets evolved around it. Exactly what happened in the early stages of the solar system formation is still being debated hotly. And we think the planets, where we see them today in their orbits, that's where they are. But now the newer theories are that the planets migrate. They are not in their current orbits. I mean, they were not in their current orbits when they were initially formed. They moved there. They migrated. So that raises all sorts of questions about, do we really understand how the planets formed? And so it goes back to the root of what do we call a planet? What is a planet?
Yeah.
And to throw another idea, the debate became more pointed, or at least the need to define what a planet is became a little more urgent, because now we have the technology with the bigger telescopes. We can now detect little wobbles in distant stars and surmise that they are also surrounded by planets orbiting them.
Yeah. What do we hope to know? I guess we don't know, but what do you think we might learn by the New Horizons going into the Kuiper Belt?
Well, if the second object that we explore in the Kuiper Belt is it similar to Pluto? I mean, what's amazing is that the Neptune encounter showed us for the first time one of its the surface of its largest moon, Triton. And I was there, and we were looking at the pictures of Triton coming down in 1989. It seems like a long time ago, but they were stunning. And Triton was seen as the best candidate for what Pluto might look like.
I see.
And, you know, what was surprising was that how different Pluto actually is compared to Triton.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody had predicted canyons, ice mountains on Pluto, or such wonderful detail and craters on Charon, for example. I mean, those were remarkable. And these are interesting because their surfaces are covered with ice, water ice, and a veneer of methane and other organic material.
Yeah, they're covered with ice. But they were amazed at the mountain formations on Pluto. Why is that significant?
We had never imagined. I think that's the wonder of exploration, is that, you see things that you have never imagined.
And they're enormous mountains.
I mean, several miles high? On an object that is roughly one-fourth or less than one-fourth the size of the Earth.
This is a scientific discovery. They didn't believe that mountains could form on such an icy surface before?
Yeah.
And why is that?
Well, the density of Pluto and Charon is rather low. Most of the planets like Earth, Mercury, Venus, they have a lot of iron in their inner core. And so that raises the density, which means you have materials which are strong enough to support large mountains.
And isn't there something to do with, they didn't think that you needed more heat to form a mountain?
Let me explain how that argument, or at least that idea, came about. They see geologic activity, that the surface is relatively young. You infer that based on the fact that you see very few impact craters. What happens in the solar system is that constantly you are being bombarded by objects, small and large. Even the Earth is hit with a lot of meteorites every day, and occasionally a larger object. And, you can find evidence in the craters that we see on all the objects that we have seen. The number of craters seen on Pluto is very small. And the inference is that you should have seen a lot more just based on what we have seen elsewhere in the solar system. And the fact that you don't see suggests that the surface has been reformed somehow. And one of the ways you change the surface is through geologic activity, like, earthquakes, mountain slides or whatever, weathering, if you have a water planet like Earth, then water can change the surface too. Like it has, we see evidence of that on Mars. Well, you haven't seen any rivers yet on Pluto, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's water and somehow it occasionally gets warm enough. We could see evidence of rivers. I mean, I wouldn't be, at this point, it wouldn't be a surprise. But that was the thing, that the surface has very few craters. It must have geologic activity. And one of the things we learned with the previous missions, especially Io at Jupiter, one of the moons of Jupiter, was that the tidal heating, the gravitational force exerted by the large planet on the moon, squishes the moon, and that causes heating. But that's not happening on Pluto and Charon because they're too small. Their gravity is too weak.
We have just a couple of minutes before we need to take another news break. But what are you most excited about? What do you think is the most important discovery from the photos that we saw?
Oh, I think we haven't seen all of it yet. Yeah. I think tomorrow more data will... the data is coming in, but tomorrow there'll be another press conference, and I think we'll learn a lot more tomorrow and for the months to come as the data continue to be sent back from the spacecraft.
Yeah, I think they're going to talk more about the atmosphere tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
And what do we know anything about the atmosphere?
It's mostly nitrogen. There will be some amount of methane in it. Why nitrogen? Carbon dioxide is very common on atmospheres like Venus, Mars. Earth had a very carbon dioxide-rich atmosphere. But then you had the gas giants, which are hydrogen and helium. And so Pluto is very different in that sense. But not too different from Saturn's moon Titan, which is also nitrogen and methane.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about Pluto and what we are learning about Pluto and welcoming your questions about Pluto. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So how excited are you about the photos that we are seeing of Pluto and its moons that were sent back from the New Horizons mission this week? We are talking with a University of Wisconsin-Madison Pluto expert during this hour and finding out what we are learning and why this matters. Sanjay Lamaye is a distinguished senior scientist in planetary science at the Space Science and Engineering Center at UW-Madison. 1-800-642-1234 1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And while you're there, you can check out the photographs that are posted from the New Horizons mission. And NASA also provided a link to its news conference yesterday where the lead scientists were talking about the most important discoveries. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about Pluto this hour with our guest expert on Pluto and welcoming your questions about what we are learning about Pluto with the photographs being sent back from the New Horizons mission. We'll also talk about the future of space exploration and what else we're hoping to learn from our guest. And we're welcoming your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sanjay Lamaye. He is a distinguished senior scientist in planetary science at the Space Science and Engineering Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We have Ella on Facebook who asks, do we know Pluto's temperature and what temperature is the New Horizon experiencing now?
Excellent question. I think we have some idea of the surface temperature of Pluto, and it's very cold. It's probably about minus 55 Kelvin or about minus 220 centigrade.
Something. Typical Wisconsin winter.
Typical Wisconsin winter. Yeah, but we'll get more information probably on Friday when we learn about the newer observations. But it's cold. I think the as you go far away from the sun, there's less sunlight available to heat up now. This is just a guess so far because Pluto has certainly been a surprise, both Pluto and its largest moon, Charon. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have to revise our thoughts, but I think the expectation is that probably it's around minus 210 to 20 centigrade, minus centigrade.
And speaking of the temperatures, this is the first time we've ever seen ice mountains?
Yes, I don't think. I mean, we have seen ice on the moons of the outer planets. Certainly, Triton, Neptune's moon, is covered with ice. We have known that. Moons of Saturn and Jupiter, Ganymede, Callisto, Europa, Enceladus, they are covered with ice and may even have oceans underneath. So now there's a new family of objects being called ocean worlds. And I think one member of Congress has even proposed exploring ocean worlds, so that's one possibility. But when it comes to Pluto, I think the surprise was seeing the large mountains. For an object this small, to see mountains several miles high and canyons deep enough, deeper than perhaps Grand Canyon. I mean, you can see the cut on the edge of these planets' images, at least certainly Charon. That was a surprise. And the belief is that some of the geologic activity on these objects is being driven by internal heat, heat of formation from radioactive decay. So there are many things we are learning. But there's one thing I do want to comment on, by the way, because it's amazing how imagination can be almost a premonition. Many years ago, there was a book published by Clyde Tombaugh and Sir Patrick Moore, Out of the Darkness, Pluto.
Oh, yeah.
And on the cover was a picture painted by an artist, Don Dixon. And I think the first surprise was how similar that picture and Pluto looked. There's even the crater that you see in this picture, even the heart-shaped feet, the Clyde Tombaugh Regio.
That is amazing, remarkable. And you have just brought this up on your laptop. And there's how did they know that?
Well, he didn't. Don Dixon was a wonderful is a wonderful space artist, and he just posted this picture again on the website. And I had bought a copy of that book many, many years ago. I was looking for it yesterday in my office. But it was amazing that, somehow he just captured the essential features that we have seen on Pluto, which was remarkable.
What was the name of that book again?
Out of the Darkness, Pluto. Clyde Tombaugh and Sir Patrick Moore.
We'll look for that, and we'll see if we can post that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page so people can look at that photograph of Pluto that is amazingly similar to what Pluto actually looks like, and they didn't know that.
Clyde Tombaugh was a Midwest learner. I think he was born in Illinois, and then he didn't have money to go to college, but he liked to look at the sky, so he had built some telescopes.
We have Chris on Facebook who says, I watched the news conference, especially regarding the mountains found on Pluto and Charon, the moon, and notably Tombaugh Regio, which is the heart on Pluto, named after its discoverer. Very interesting stuff. And notably the 11,000-foot mountains discovered on Pluto and Charon's lack of impact craters. So he's following this pretty closely. We just talked about all that stuff. Talk about that heart on Pluto and the significance of naming that Tombaugh Regio.
Well, I think it's a very nice gesture to name it after a person who worked very hard to discover Pluto. Now, as it turned out, Clyde Tombaugh was lucky, because it turns out right in our backyard at Yerkes Observatory, they had been taking pictures of that part of the sky, and when they went back after the discovery and looked at those plates, they had seen Pluto sometime earlier. And so why should Clyde get the credit? Well, he was hired by Percival Lowell at Flagstaff Observatory to basically look for Pluto, because its position was predicted. And I think that's one of the things that I didn't have time to mention earlier, was that there are two planets which were predicted to exist and were found. Uranus was discovered accidentally, but Neptune's existence was predicted, and even the location of the part of the sky where it might be found. So that's a remarkable feat in our development of knowledge in astronomy, that you predict an object and lo and behold, it's there. And similarly, existence of another planet, a massive planet, was predicted. And that's why the search for Pluto was undertaken by Percival Lowell. Of course, Pluto was not called Pluto at that point.
Interesting, yeah.
But when it was discovered, it took many years to realize that Pluto was too puny. And to give you a brief idea of how they were predicted, basically, from the laws of motion, Kepler's laws of motion, we can predict the positions of the planets. And outer planets are moving so slowly that the database, the observations over which the positions of Uranus and Neptune were measured from, photographic plates or visual observations. We didn't have a long enough database to precisely determine their orbits. And when they tried to predict their positions, it was discovered that they were not where they should be. And the idea was that the gravitational pull of a massive object could disturb them. And that's how Neptune was discovered. It was, its position was predicted because it was tugging on Jupiter, Saturn, and certainly Uranus. And when they started tracking Neptune, its all position was also not being found precisely in the sky. And so another massive object was predicted. Then it turned out we didn't really need that, because the observations were not very accurate.
We have another question. Bill on Facebook asks, does Pluto rotate fast enough for New Horizons to get pictures of its entire surface?
Oh, yes, there's already a map published. Yes, it does rotate. I mean, I think just by watching the amount of light received from Pluto, its period was known some time back. And there is a full map, not at the highest resolution, but I'm sure we'll get better maps. It's known. I don't remember what the period is, but it's not very long.
This is funny. I'm going to laugh. Joe emails, why don't we name February 29th every 4 years Plutes Day, giving the little fellow some respect?
well, why not? I don't have any.
So, of course, we were talking earlier that the days of the week now are named after the planets, at least the ones that we knew about at the time.
Yeah. So. And by the way, the five planets known to the ancients, and then the sun and the moon. But notice that there's no word for Earth in the
calendar.
That's
true. Well, yeah, that's right.
And so to get back to Pluto, it was suggested by Virginia Burney. Then the names of the moons came from that part of the Greek-Roman mythology.
Minute or two to go before we're done. I did want to just talk about, we talked already a little bit about where New Horizons is headed. What else is NASA doing? What else do we need to know about our universe and beyond?
Well, is there life elsewhere? I think that's one of the burning questions. And that's why we are going back to Mars again with another rover and then another spacecraft to bring it back. But I wouldn't be surprised if we find life elsewhere in the solar system and perhaps in our own immediate neighborhood, Venus. I mean, the closest planet to us, easy to get to in a few months. There's so much we don't know about Venus compared to the other planets, that it's about time that we went back to Venus. I mean,
in our final minute, why do you think this is important that we know more about Venus and Mars and Pluto?
Well, last few decades, the debate has been what will the Earth's future climates be? I mean, we are talking about drought in California, and then at the same time, we have floods elsewhere. So the weather is getting chaotic. Our climate is changing. There are many people who don't want to accept that fact or the fact that whether human activity has anything to do with it or not, blame it on the sun. But it's not easy to prove the solar connection. It's not just because of the fact that, yes, all the planets get their heat basically from the sun, but the solar activity. So the sun-climate connection is not completely proven yet. And Venus is a good candidate because it's a simple atmosphere, no seasons, no oceans, no topography, no biology that we know of, unless we discover it when we get there. We can test the ideas on Venus that we find we need questions to.
We'll have you back when we know more or want to know more. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Sanjay Lamaye is a distinguished senior scientist in planetary science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to Caleb Lado and to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.